Hello, Mzanzi. Welcome to episode 427 of the Farmers Inside Track podcast. My name is Duncan Masua, and I'm your host for this episode. Now, ostrich farming is booming in South Africa, with huge opportunities both locally and abroad. Now, in this episode, Kabelo Lekalakala of Pitso Ostrich Farm in the Northwest shares key considerations when selecting a location for ostrich farming, infrastructure requirements, feed practices, and more. Kabelo, welcome to Farmers Inside Track. It's definitely lovely having you with us. You know, I want to get straight into it because there is either an aspiring ostrich farmer listening to this conversation right now, or there is someone that's already started, but they're trying to grow and level up their farming enterprise. What would you say are the key considerations when selecting a location for an ostrich farm?
Greetings, Duncan Masiwa. Let me express gratitude for the extension of the invitation having this conversation with me. I would also like to extend salutations to your audience at large. Thank you for having me. I will share most of my lived experience trying to rear ostriches as an emerging ostrich farmer. I will imagine myself to be as such, not commercial as yet, although those are my aspirations. Basically, ostrich industry is a very regulated industry, given by a number of factors, one being the Diseases Control Act, Animal Diseases Control Act, that ensures that the ostriches are reared in a ecologically and biosecurity savvy area. Given that most of the ostrich production and market destination is export orientated, measures such as product quality, traceability, and other related factors around quality, they are taken into consideration. Hence, the hefty regulations that an aspiring ostrich farmer will have to comply with a number of VPN, veterinary notice procedures. The one we have in the ostrich industry is VPN 100, primarily looking into biosecurity, the general upkeeping and healthy animal welfare ostrich rearing. The ideal location for ostrich farming is in your drier, arid areas. Climatic conditions should be dry, basically, with a very minimal summer rainfalls. It will be better during the winter season, rainfall during winter season. A climate similar to that of Glengarry in the Western Cape, for that's where ostrich industry is very much concentrated in. So a climatic profile similar to that, it will be probably in around Limpopo or the Northern Cape. It should be the ideal climate. The surface should be flat with a very minimal shrubs or rocky surfaces. So if you could have that kind of a climate or area, it will be ideal for an efficient production of ostrich farming. The basic infrastructure you need to have will be proper fencing to guard the movements of the birds and also to keep the predators at bay. Ample supply of water supply, because of ostriches, since they do not have paws, they consume lots of water to keep themselves dehydrated in that harsh, hot water element. If you have an elevated feeding troughs for water and the feed, that should be about it. The design of the encampment, I imagine 50 ostriches can be encamped in a hectare of a land or a ground. That should do as far as a responsible farming in ostriches concerned.
Of course, we know that all animals are prone to diseases and health issues. What are the common health issues in ostriches, and any thoughts on how they could possibly be prevented and treated?
The very prevalent and devastating health challenges around ostriches will be your avian influenza virus. There was one that devastated the industry back in 2004. That's the one that I can remember, where there were a lot of culling of ostriches that were infected by the bird flu. That compromises quality of the meat as far as health regulation is concerned. Hence, back then, there were ostrich meat export bans from EU. Imagine it will have a devastating impact on the farmer itself. some of these ailments or diseases, they are airborne, and the farmer has little control over such, because a pathogen can be carried from one farm to another by a bird, a wild bird that will come and drink from the ostrich's water throat. And by so doing, the ostrich could be easily contaminated or infected by such. And also the markets dictate, or they'll prefer ostriches that are reared in an open area, that there is also some animal welfare around that, that they are not encamped in the confined spaces or in the sheltered spaces. So there is a very tricky balancing exercise whereby ostriches, they're given much exposure in a natural habitation and yet insulated from infectious diseases such as avian influenza. Other than avian influenza will be your routine deworming just to manage the gut health of an ostrich. Interestingly enough, the gastro system of an ostrich is also aided by rocks, you know, the digestion, to aid ostriches with digestions of the food consumed. The ostrich needs to have an access to gravel stones that they swallow, and they aid the ostriches with digestion of the food. If you deny an ostrich access to those stones, over time it will have complications around the digestive system, of which it could have a very adversarial consequences to the animal health. What the farmer can do is just being strict on their biosecurity protocols, and the rest you leave it to God. That's our trade as farmers. We always have that aspect of faith that I'll do my best and God will take care of the rest.
What feeding practices and nutritional requirements would you say are essential for optimal ostrich growth and production?
One thing interesting about ostriches is that from hatchery, a day-old ostrich up until they are 7 days, they feed on their yolk sulk. So they are self-dependent as far as nutrition is concerned. Then over time, you can start off with the starter crumbs. The starter crumbs feed composition will be your lucerne is crushed, your maize is also crushed there. Then there will be also some folic acid or your soya bean. So a very balanced diet is required there, which will be having your carbohydrate, your fiber, your oil, and those vitamins. So as it grows, you have your lucerne pellets as well. Lucerne is also very important as a base feed composition. You can even expose the chicks as they are growing to a fresh lucerne that we have grown on the ground, and they will pack it fresh as it is. It's very good, though it should not be in excess, so that the lucerne does not ferment and have complications to the ostrich and infancy digestive system. We also need to realize optimal growth of your ostriches. You need to have a balanced diet for them. I remember at some point I used to feed my ostriches a lot of mealies. That had a very bad impact on the ostriches because of it was excess of carbohydrates, and they gotten bigger, whereas their feet were still small. So they will have swollen knees and stuff like that. That's when a friend of mine, who I also consider him a very good mentor of mine, advised me to take off maize and rather source lucerne pellets, because of the pellets, they are balanced as far as composition or nutritional demands of the ostrich for optimal growth is concerned.
Let's talk about marketing strategies. What marketing strategies and channels would you recommend for selling ostrich products, you know, such as meat and leather and eggs? Any advice that you can give to an aspiring ostrich farmer?
Quite fascinating questions, Duncan, because I'm looking forward to meaningfully participate in the current 2 billion rand industry, which is predominantly export-orientated. The market destination for ostrich post-production, which you will be having your meat or your feather and your leather, it's predominantly in your UK, your Germany, Belgium, and those European countries. Like back then, the genesis of the ostrich trade started with the feather back in the early 1600s or 1700s. whereby the feathers were very, very much competitive or a lucrative business to venture in, other than minerals trading or tobacco or any other agricultural products. So in a nutshell, yes, the leather of an ostrich is an exotic leather, which are used in the production of luxury items, your high fashion or your high-end brand. They source ostrich and alligator skin for their high-end products, you know, luxurious goods. So it's with the feathers in the fashion industry. Meat consumption is also there, but it only contributes around about, I would say, 10% towards the farmer's income. The remaining 70% is shared amongst feather and leather trade. So that indicates how lucrative this discipline could be. It's just that it's niche, so there shouldn't be an excess in production just to stabilize the prices. As much as, yes, we may need to encourage farmers to come in and participate, there shouldn't be so much that there is overproduction and that will depress the pricing, because the farmers are price grabbers. Prices are dictated by the demand. You will need to set an equilibrium that the supply do not exceed the demand. My aspiration in a nutshell will be if we could have new entrants could be accommodated, and I'm also very much comforted by sentiments of our newly appointed Honorable Minister John Steenhuisen, whereby he emphasized that our local agricultural industries should be afforded access to markets, be it local or international. Because of such, will then enable the current guys, the current producers or the current established companies or producers to accommodate new entrants, so that all of us, we can meaningfully participate in the industry. We create value, and indeed we make an ostrich very fashionable as for both the local market and the international market.
Thanks, Kabelo Lekalakala, founder of Pitso Ostrich Farm in the Northwest. You can, of course, read more on this topic by visiting www.foodfromzanzi.co.za. And that's a wrap. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss any of the episodes. From me, Duncan Masiwa, our technical producer, Megan van der Vent, and the rest of hashtag Team Food from Zanzi, thanks for listening.
Life in South Africa can be a lot. I mean, scroll through Twitter for a minute and tell me I'm wrong. Thank God for South Africans though, right? We're inspiring, and even on the bad days, we fight back with a smile. That's why I love Food for Mzanzi so much. They're not ashamed to celebrate the ordinary unsung heroes who work every day to put food on our nation's tables. Go to foodformzanzi.co.za and never miss an inspiring story.